There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines, and top debate. This is The Grill, live from Barasti with Tom Urquhart on DubaiEye1038.
Welcome back to the second hour of the show, and we start the second hour with news of another goal. It's not at Manchester United on this occasion, but it is over in Spain. Eibar have equalised with Real Madrid, and by all accounts, they deserve it as well. Pedro Leon's outswinger, plumb on Ramos' head, powers it past Navas in the Real Madrid goal from 6 yards, got up above Ramos, so well there. It's game on over in Spain at the moment, where Eibar are equal with Real Madrid. It's one apiece at the moment, Ramos scoring after 50 minutes. Is that the case over at Old Trafford? Let's get a look to this. Mark Archer's watching Man United against Liverpool.
38 minutes gone at Old Trafford. It still remains Manchester United 2, Liverpool 0. We've just seen a great chance fall to the Manchester United midfielder, Juan Mata. It basically was a crossing from the left-hand side. Difficult shot for him. It was an overhead kick, and it's just skimmed past the post, almost with an open goal, but it was a difficult chance for Juan Mata. That would have made the score, well, a mountain to climb for Liverpool then if it had gone to 3-0. But it's been the man of the moment is young Marcus Rashford. 2 goals for Rashford in the first 24 minutes. So it was after 14 minutes, a powerful strike, great technique show, and it was very direct play. It was a goal kick from De Gea, headed on by Lukaku, cut inside by Rashford, and then he's just clipped it into the far corner. Almost a carbon copy finish for the second goal. Same foot, same corner. And very clinical from Marcus Rashford. So 40 minutes gone at Old Trafford. Manchester United 2, Liverpool 0.
Let us get the latest from the world of rugby. CVR's watching this one for us.
Yeah, Tom, we just had a kick-off in Super Rugby. It's the Sharks taking on the Sunwolves. That game is coming to us live from Durban, and it's a Robert Dupree penalty that separates the two teams. Sharks 3, Sunwolves 0.
Thanks very much indeed. There's cricket for you as well. Live cricket ongoing at the moment. We've got PSL action, but also we've got South Africa in action against Australia. Second test match being played down in Port... What is it with the band down at Port Elizabeth when the cricket's on? They've got this band that just plays on incessantly throughout the entire test.
How annoying, honestly. But yeah, it's been a tradition down at St. George's Park. And
just for the cricket?
Yeah, ever since I've known they've been there for years and years. And they're the guys with the longest breaths, Tom, because they just don't stop. They just keep going.
Will they be there for 5 days? Let's find out. It's a green old pitch down there.
Yeah, it has been doing a bit. And I can just bring you news of a wicket from Port Elizabeth. Hashim Amla has been dismissed, bowled by Mitchell Stark, for 56. So South Africa are now 155 for 3. They trail Australia by 88 runs with 7 wickets remaining in their first innings. At the crease for South Africa, the opener, Dean Elgar, he's 57 not out. He's been joined by their best batsman in the first test match, AB de Villiers, who's yet to score. He's only faced 2 deliveries. So South Africa, 155 for 3. That's in reply to Australia's first innings of 243 that they completed yesterday at Port Elizabeth.
There is PSL action for you at the moment as well.
Exactly. It's a doubleheader today at Dubai International Cricket Stadium. The late match sees Peshawar take on the Quetta Gladiators. Early match at Dubai International Cricket Stadium is the Multan Sultans, currently second in the PSL standings, taking on the Karachi Kings. It's the Kings who are batting first, and they've got away to a pretty good score. Only one ball remaining in their innings. They're 182 for 3, the Kings. Ingram, the South African, 23 not out. Ravi Bopara, 4 not out. So Karachi Kings looking like mounting a pretty good score there, 182 for 3 with one ball remaining of their 20 overs.
Talk more cricket in just a little while, but let's get back to the golf as well, because we've been talking about the Valspar. A lot of interest in that one because of a certain Tiger Woods. But equally, we've also got action taking place over in India. It's the Indian Open, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah. It's the Hero Indian Open taking place in Delhi. A lot of the big name players are in the stateside, obviously, getting their preparations for the Masters intact. But I can tell you there is one big story there, and that's the young Indian golfer, the man of the moment in world golf, Shubhankar Sharma, who shot a great round yesterday. 64 he shot to burst up the leaderboard, and he's now finished the day in a tie for first. It's Matt Wallace from the UK and Shubhankar Sharma who are tied for the lead at 7 under par. One shot back is the Scot Stephen Gallagher at 6 under par, and then there's three players tied for fourth. Andrew Beef Johnson at 5 under, Matthias Schwab from Austria, and Emiliano Grillo at 5 under par. Let's just have a quick listen to the man of the moment, Indian Shubhankar Sharma, after his second round, 64 yesterday.
This year's Indian Open returns to the impressive DLF Golf and Country Club in Gurgaon, just outside the capital, New Delhi. It's a dramatic and very testing Gary Player layout, which was the hardest of the year on the 2017 European Tour. Emiliano Grillo claimed that his first round 65 was probably the equivalent of a 59 anywhere else, and after following it up with a 68, the Argentinian leads by 4 at halfway.
When I practice on Tuesday and then play the prom on Wednesday, I say if I could shoot on the par every day out here, I'll be in good position. So hopefully I keep it going, and I couldn't ask for anything different.
Grillo's closest challenger is the local hero and player of the season so far on the European Tour, Shubhankar Sharma, who has already won twice in South Africa and in Malaysia. An invitation to the Masters was duly forthcoming for the 21-year-old, and he'd love to go to Augusta as winner of his National Open. Grillo is on 11 under, Sharma on 7 under. Then it's Pablo Larrazabal and Andrew Beef Johnston on 6 under par. Wallace, Horn, Dantorp and Pattiarat are 6 behind. Peterson and Loughton in the group at 4 under par. The cut fell at 3 over par, which means that defending champion SSP Chaurasia missed out. So too did Julian Suri. Welcome to day 3 of the Hero Indian Open at the DLF Golf and Country Club.
So day 3 is well and truly underway, in fact coming to a conclusion. So let's just get a quick reminder. Archie's already told us about the leaderboard, but just remind us again.
Yeah, so the day 3 has concluded at the Hero Indian Open over in Delhi, and it's a two-way tie for the lead. Matt Wallace from the UK and the young rising Indian star of world golf, Shubhankar Sharma. They are tied at 7 under par. Stephen Gallagher is one shot back at 6 under par, and there's three players tied at 5 under par and a tie for fourth. Andrew Beef Johnson, Matthias Schwab and Emiliano Grillo. So it's gearing up for a great final day tomorrow at the Indian Open over in Delhi.
We are watching Manchester United against Liverpool. It's been all Man United in this first half. One thing that hasn't happened in the first half, despite Jurgen Klopp looking very, very dissatisfied, is it hasn't boiled over between him and a certain Mourinho, as we have seen in the past. So we'll keep a close eye on that one for you. That said, in the build-up to this one, there has been something of a war of words between the two managers as they've been trading thoughts with each other.
I'm not very good on that culture of this rival is special, that match is special. I've never been very, very good at it. I never looked to AC Milan as the biggest rival. I never look at Atletico Madrid as the enemy. I never look to Spurs or to Arsenal as the big rival. I've never been very, very good on it.
The big rivalry is since ages, I would say, but in the last few years, obviously, Man United was more successful than us. That's the truth. And we respect that. It doesn't disturb the moment, to be honest, but it's on the other side, we respect that, of course. And this United team has a specific way of playing football. That's all. And if we have to defend there, we have to defend there with all we have.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
Rangers against Celtic, that one's tomorrow as well. Talking of a number of big games to look forward to, but they don't get much bigger. The Manchester United against Liverpool, that's the game that's being played at the moment. Let's get an update from Mark Archer on the Man U Liverpool game. It's half-time.
Yeah, it is half-time at Old Trafford. Manchester United 2, Liverpool 0. It's a double to the young Englishman Marcus Rashford. The first goal after 14 minutes. His double came after 23. Juan Mata missed a pretty good chance for United in the dying stages of the first half, and Jose Mourinho will be the much happier coach between the two. So Manchester United really dominated the best chances. It was a carbon copy of two goals for Marcus Rashford, cutting inside from the left-hand side and placing two clinical finishes in the far corner of the Liverpool goal. So half-time at Old Trafford, Manchester United 2, Liverpool 0, and I think Jose Mourinho the bus conductor will be conducting traffic in the second half, Tom.
64 minutes gone in the early over in Spain. Eibar taking on Real Madrid. It's one apiece in that as Real Madrid's problems continue in La Liga. Cristiano Ronaldo's 34th minute goal cancelled out by Ramos on 50. But Gareth Bale and Real Madrid have just gone close. He just hit the post in the box. So we'll keep an eye on that one for you. Let's get to the rugby. CVR's keeping an eye on the live for us.
Yeah, Tom, one live game happening at the moment. The Sharks taking on the Sunwolves, and what I can tell you is Makazolo Mpimpi has dived over for a five-pointer for the Sharks. Of course, that converted by Robert Tapria. A penalty by Robert Tapria. 30 minutes played. Sharks 10, Sunwolves 0.
We've got live PSL action taking place down at the Dubai International Cricket Stadium, not far from us at the moment. Mark Archer's watching that one for us.
Yeah, two matches today in a doubleheader at the Dubai International Cricket Stadium. Late match sees Peshawar take on the Quetta Gladiators. That's Peshawar in fifth taking on the Quetta, who are third. Match underway. 20 overs just been completed in the first innings of the Karachi Kings taking on the Multan Sultans, and they've finished 188 for 3. Top scoring is Joe Dentley, the Englishman, with 78, and Babar Azam also chipped in with 58. So the Karachi have finished their innings after 20 overs 188 for 3. So coming to the crease shortly will be the Multan Sultans.
Lahore not playing today. They were in action yesterday. Why do we know that? Because our next guest, if they were playing today, wouldn't be sat alongside us from our broadcast position up here at Barasti. Former Zimbabwean right-handed batsman who's played at first class level, played for the Matabeleland Tuskers, franchise in the Logan Cup, Premier Domestic League in Zimbabwe, is also focused towards sports nutrition, runs a company providing nutritional services. He's one of the coaches, the senior academy manager, in fact, down at It's Just Cricket here in the UAE. But he can also add to the CV and the list of things achieved. He's part of the coaching staff for Lahore this year. Bradley Sutton joins us live from our broadcast position. Good to have you on board, Brad.
Thanks again. It's great to always be down at Barasti with you guys.
How's it been? PSL, good experience?
It's been great, yeah. Definitely a lot of hard work, a lot more hard work than my last coaching position with the Bengal Tigers in December. They've got heavy schedules, you know, back-to-back games, not a lot of rest days, and you've got to factor in practices somewhere along the line there. And so, yeah, looking after the squads in terms of fitness, practice, recovery, it's been a tough tournament on the players, but in terms of entertainment, I think it's been very entertaining. Success.
It seems to be quite an intense tournament. I've been looking at the schedule. I mean, they play a lot of cricket, don't they?
They do. They do. I mean, they jam packing, you know, the league into a month of cricket, really. And so there's a round robin of 10 games. You play everyone twice, and then your semis and then your final. So definitely a lot of cricket.
And Brad, we're getting towards the sort of middle and later stages of the competition. There are matches scheduled to go back to Pakistan. There's always a big debating point about how many of the international players, the big high-profile guys, will travel back to Pakistan due to the obvious security reasons. I think last season they went back for the final, but they're trying to, I think, they have both semi-finals back there this year. Any word on the street on players, international players in particular, will be going to Pakistan for these final stages matches? It's a bit of a shame. If the players play throughout the competition, then the teams are left without the big names because of the matches being scheduled back there.
No, definitely. You know, I think the sad thing about it is that a lot of people are affected by this. You know, it's not just the players and it's not just the teams, but, you know, the people of Pakistan as well. You know, they crave to watch cricket on home soil, and to, you know, have something like that taken away from you, it's not fair on anyone. And the players they sympathize with this as well, but, you know, they're also caught in a hard place where, you know, they've got to think about themselves or think about, you know, their safety. And there's a lot of players that are on the fence. Some are, you know, it doesn't really bother them. Some, you know, some are thinking about it, and, you know, some might fall away. But, you know, considering that the final went well last year with no hiccup, there's definitely a lot more foreign players that I think are probably leaning towards, you know, going to Pakistan for the semis and the final.
Let's talk about the players if we can. Let's focus on the Lahore Qalandars, who you've been working with in recent times as well. Obviously, the core of the players, the retained players, the pick players as well, are coming from Pakistan. A couple of emerging category players also in the list as well. But from the time that you've spent them with them and the culture that you've seen develop within the squad, within the training sessions as well, who have been the sort of standout international players who've brought their own experience to the fore?
Well, I think obviously Brendan McCullum will always be up there, you know, and that's why they've brought him into the team. Experience, you know, says it all. As an example, last night he shifted himself down the order to add a bit of stability to the middle order for Lahore Qalandars, and he is someone that just will bat, you know, his natural game is to bat with freedom and score very quickly. But he's got so much experience, and he's got the talent that, you know, he changed gears, and he was able to not just smash the ball around yesterday, but guide Lahore across the finish line last night, you know, rotating the strike.
I want to talk about one of the other players that we don't know much about, and Pakistan cricket has a habit for unearthing fast bowlers, and particularly some very good left arm fast bowlers. Shaheen Afridi yesterday, 17-year-old. I first saw this highlight this morning and I thought it was Shaheen Afridi coming back, you know, a blast from the past. But it's a 17-year-old pacer, Shaheen Afridi. The amazing figures that he returned yesterday. 3.4 overs, one maiden, 4 for 5. What can you tell us about this young quick?
Well, that's the thing. Is the first time I had seen him was when I joined the squad and I saw him down at practice. And obviously when, you know, judging books by a cover, when you walk in and you see the squad, you look at their physical profiles, and Shaheen is a very tall lad, very well built, and Pakistan have a lot of bowlers like that. So automatically I was like, well, here we go, here's another Pakistani quick bowler, you know, coming through the ranks. But then when I saw him bowl, he is completely different from the norm of, you know, your Pakistan bowlers. Your current quicks at the moment that are really doing well for Pakistan are your short, slender frame bowlers, Muhammad, Amir Yaman, Junaid Khan, that run in really quick. They're not, you know, your generic built big bowlers, but they bowling quick, 140, get the ball to swing. And then your bigger bowlers, you hit the deck bowlers, Sohail Tanveer and the likes of them, you know, when they're running up to the crease, they rely a lot on their upper body. But then when you watch Shaheen bowl, he's just so smooth. You know, he glides through the crease effortlessly, and, you know, I reckon with a bit more conditioning and a bit more experienced coaches guiding him and pointing him in the right direction, he's got a bright future ahead. 150, I reckon he'll probably get to in terms of speed.
How soon before Pakistan pick him to play international cricket? Because they have a tendency, and they've done extremely well identifying talent at young ages and pushing them without much first class or domestic experience. They'll get them straight in the test team or in the ODI side or the T20 side pretty much straight away and just let them go and let them develop.
Well, that's the thing, is I think it's there's two reasons to that. Because of all the issues that are happening in Pakistan, getting that experience, you're probably going to gain that experience far much quicker by joining the international side. So pushing them into the side young is probably the easiest way for them to gain that experience. In saying that, it will be hard because there are a lot of bowlers that are doing well for Pakistan at the moment. So fitting him in somewhere is a question. I don't know what he's like as a four-day bowler, as a longer format. You know, so where's his breakthrough going to come? Is it going to be in the shorter format or is it going to be in the test format? But in saying that, beautiful bowler, beautiful action, and then at 17 years old to have the composure on the international stage to bowl your 4 overs for 4 runs and take 5 wickets, considering the games leading up to that have not been great, and, you know, it shows definitely a bright future ahead of him.
I know that you're with Lahore. You don't want to shoot yourself in the foot. I don't want to be too controversial, but I'm fascinated to see from a coaching perspective. One question I've always meant to ask, when it comes to franchise cricket, when you've got so many different players from so many different corners of the globe at different points of their careers all coming together for training. Is there, do you notice from a coaching perspective a different approach to the intensity, the training, the teaching that goes on with it? Because you've got youngsters coming through the ranks, you've got those that have become ex-players within franchise that have flown in specially for this one, you've got different cultures all coming together as well. Do different nationalities train in different ways?
Yes and a no. I won't say nationalities. I think it's led from the head coach, you know, and your coaching staff, and then your senior players. They will set the, you know, the vibe in the camp as to how they're going to prepare for games. And in saying that, the squad is big because the schedule is so intense. You know, they do have backup players, so you know you're playing 11. Or your regular 11 might not be training as hard as and as frequent as the guys that are backup players, if that makes sense, because they've got to look after themselves, look after their body, given the schedule. The guys that are on the fringe, they might be pushing themselves a bit harder in practices, in nets, given that they're not playing matches. And so, yeah, everybody will be training at different intensity levels. The senior guys know what they need to do in terms of preparation to get themselves ready. McCullum knows how many balls he needs to face and what he needs to do, and that might differ from Faka Zaman. He might want to face more balls or less balls, or you know, he might only want throwdowns or a live net or a bowling machine. There's so many different ways that each player will prepare, but generally there is a template as to, right, you know, if you're a bowler, you know, you've got to put in your bowling, your batting, you've got to put in your batting preparation. As a squad, they'll all do their fielding drills and their fitness. But individually, each player knows in the back of his head what he needs to do to prepare. And generally, the youngsters will watch the senior players and watch the international players and try and learn and take as much away as they can during this PSL tournament.
We talked a lot about the players, and you mentioned big squad as well, big coaching staff as well. And again, coming from different corners of the globe, being gleaned from different areas all over. You're working with John Gloster. He's part of the setup for Lahore this year. And obviously got a wonderful CV when it comes to working as a top physio with some of the top teams, Rajasthan's Royals, India, Australia, Surrey, Bangladesh, amongst others.
Yeah.
Again, do you... Somebody who's in the naissance, who's just learning his trade, who's a young coach with big aspirations, do you take a lot from that team of experience?
Definitely. You know, there's no, you know, practice never really, I mean, what should I say? The cricket conversation never ends at the ground. You know, in between games, warm-ups, sitting at the physio table, sitting at the coffee table, sitting at breakfast, the conversation is always cricket, and you're constantly learning, and that's what I've loved about this opportunity, is the opportunity to learn from John. So, and I've been working with John now for a couple of months, so definitely have learned a lot from him. Kyle Mills is the bowling coach for Lahore Calendars, so you know, watching him and watching how he will, you know, run his bowlers or prepare his bowlers for practices and games, it's a dream come true, really.
I guess you get a chance to learn from the other coaches, but there's some real experienced players, some of the stalwarts, some of the world greats playing in this competition. I'm just looking at the match we're following, Multan taking on Karachi.
Yeah, Karachi.
Yep, at the moment. And I'm just top of the order, it's Kumar Sangakkara opening the batting. So you've got one of the all-time greats there. And then I've seen the likes of... Watson, the Australians playing. So you're getting some of the players that have been dominant in the last decade or so. As a coach, you probably learn as much from those players, as you say, watching them prepare, watching how they talk to teammates, how they go about their business. I guess for the younger players, that's awesome, but also for the coaches, you're just learning as much from those experienced veteran players.
Yeah, so sitting watching the game yesterday, Kumar Sangakkara got the game off to a flyer when we were playing against them. And I was explaining to one of the youngsters, you know, if you watch him bat, he scores at a rate of knots, but he's not slogging. He's playing proper cricket shots. They look beautiful. They look classic, you know. But him, Watson, a lot of the players, when you look at the top 10 scoring batsmen at the moment, a lot of the guys that are sitting at the top of the table, it's all about experience. Even with McCullum, like I mentioned earlier, he changed his role in the team from smashing the ball to, you know, working the ball around, making sure we got across the finish line. That experience counts for so much in T20. You've seen T20 change over the last couple of years. People said, you know, T20 is just a slogging game. You know, the game has changed so much, the approach to the game, showing that you can manipulate a bowler and manipulate the field, not by slogging, but just by placing, having a game plan in place, understanding what the bowler is going to be doing. It's cricket at its highest. You know, they say in test match, there's a lot of thinking in the process that goes into test match cricket. Well, if you think about 2020, the amount of thinking that you've got to put in there, and the game is far much, you know, far paced, things change so quickly and suddenly. No matter what version you're playing, you're constantly thinking, just watching Sangakkara and Watson show how much experience counts and, you know, not just muscle. That's the beauty of the game.
Brad, on a totally different level, you've obviously played the game at the highest level. This week in the press, we've been hearing and reading a lot about sledging. Is it part of the cricket game? should it continue? Are people making too much of it? What's your take on it?
You know what? It's been there since the game began, and it will never fall away. You know, and it's part of cricket. It's part of cricket, and it boils down to you as a person or individual, how you take it, and what you consider, you know, crossing the line. I mean, there's, you know, we South Africa, Australia at the moment, and it's going to be heated. The competition is fierce. And nobody, you know, you're trying your best, and so, you know, the mental side of it comes in. And I mean, it hasn't just been South Africa and Australia. The World Cup qualifiers are happening at the moment in Zimbabwe, and same thing there. You read through the match reports, and there's been a list of players that have had offences down in Zimbabwe as well. Match fees, level one, level two penalties. And it comes with pressure. You've got 10 teams there, 10 or 8, I'm not exactly sure, competing for two spots in the World Cup. So the pressure's on. And I think this is what happens when, you know, when pressure happens. And now with stump mics and umpires coming into the picture, they pick up on things that, you know, maybe you wouldn't. Yeah. I mean, there's any sport, football, rugby, there's sledging somewhere along the lines.
One thing I will add into this, if I may, is that I was sort of listening at GOG. I tuned in yesterday morning because I think what it has done is put cricket onto the front pages as well as the back pages the world over because of this chat. Tuned in to watch the first passage of play yesterday, you know, because I'm sure a number of people did around the world. And I was a little bit of a GOG, you know, listening to the comments of a certain AB and Smudger Smith in commentary for things. So Alan Border and Graham Smith telling me, a cricket fan, that, you know, what goes on out there in the field, let's put this one to bed, let's let cricket do the talking. Two of the finest exponents of sledging known to mankind.
Yeah, exactly.
Postulating about the fact that cricket needs to be the headline, etc. I mean, come on, guys.
It's part of the whole debate. And, you know, we had the incident, the high-profile incident with the caught by the CCTV cameras of David Warner taking offence to some comments. Now, just to put that in context, South Africa were going to lose the test match. Quentin de Kock was involved in a bit of a partnership. He was at the crease for a session. He would have had 11 Australians going at him for 2 hours in that session, giving it to him, whatever they wanted to say. That it was the two batsmen at the crease and the 11 Australians giving it to him, particularly David Warner, who's look hasn't got a clean rap sheet, has he? He's been through the mill a few times with sledging. He kind of leads the pack. He's the dog there that's barking.
He's not the vicar anymore, is he?
No, exactly. So as soon as Quentin de Kock finds time to give a comment, whatever he said, back to David Warner.
Quick and witty, must I add.
Quick and witty. And then David Warner reacts like he reacts. If you can't give it out, you know, if you can't afford to give it out, you've got to take it, don't you? And David Warner, you know, to take exception to certain comments coming from him, you know, it's the pot calling the kettle black. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for David Warner. Whatever said seemed to get him pretty riled up at the time. But look, it's a man's game. And we talked about this yesterday. Some players love to be involved in the heat of the battle, love the sledging. I remember guys when they played against, say, Steve Waugh. Steve Waugh loved coming out to bat at 30 for 3 and loved a tough situation with the team going at him. I remember international teams used to say, when Steve Waugh's in, whatever the situation, don't speak to him. Don't comment about his batting. Just be quiet. because he needed that concentration. I remember when I used to play, I used to like being sledged because it got me in the game.
You're so used to it. They've been sledging you since the age of 10.
Exactly.
It's just an easy target, aren't?
But for some players, for some players, to be able to concentrate, to be able to sort of, to kind of get your senses heightened, you need to be sledged. And I found I was a better player when I was under pressure, and being sledged, I could concentrate properly. And when I wasn't, the game was drifting. I couldn't stay focused. Some players like it, and that's just part of the game. And you know, whether the Aussies call it mental desegregation or sledging or chirping, as the South Africans call it, it's there. It's part and parcel. What's highlighted is things like the technology with social media, with CCTV cameras, with mics on the wickets. Umpires need to take control of the match. Captains need to take control of the teams, and it's not such a big issue.
Just to jump in, there's been another goal over in Spain, and it's gone to the visitors. Real Madrid have re-established their one-goal lead, and it's that man Ronnie who's turned up yet again to make Eibar pay. Eibar give it away high up the pitch. Modric feeds Carvajal, and Ronaldo is on the gallop into the box. He meets the cross perfectly in between centre-backs, heads past Dimitrovic. It's Real Madrid 2, Eibar 1. Sorry, Mark Archer.
I was finished. With my note, as I leave it open to be sledged.
I think there's three points there to sledging. One, if you can't take it, don't give it, right? Two, it's part of cricket. There's that conversation about what happens on the field stays on the field, and that happened in my career. A lot of my mates, you know, that I'm mates with now, when I played cricket against them at a first-class level, international level, whatever level it was, they would sledge you. And then on the field, you would have a beer with them, have them over for a barbecue, you were mates. It's part of the game, right? But like you said, now with social media and technology, it doesn't get left on the field. It finds its way off the field into the newspaper and computer screen and mobile phone of every person who follows cricket around the world. So that aspect of leaving it on the field is difficult now.
Let's just get a quick update, if we can, Archie, from that game. South Africa taking on Australia. Then I'm going to get Brad's thoughts on this second test match. Obviously a series that's been dominated by Australia thus far.
Yeah, let me give you an update. There's been a wicket while we've been speaking. Dean Elgar, the left-handed opening batsman for South Africa, has been dismissed. Caught behind by Tim Payne. Bowled Josh Hazlewood for 57. So the wickets to fall today, the big wickets anyway, were Amla, bowled for 56, and then Dean Elgar has been dismissed for 57. So South Africa just stuttering a touch, 170 for 4 in reply to Australia's first innings of 243. Key partnership for me now at the crease. AB de Villiers, 11 not out. Faf du Plessis on 4. For me, this is probably the key partnership in the South African innings. Two very experienced players, two guys you would hope will kick on, put a partnership together and get beyond Australia. The pitch started to turn today and started to bounce, and South Africa will want a dominant first innings lead because they're going to have to bat last on this wearing, tearing pitch.
12 wickets on day one of a 5-day test match. Is that down to the South African bowling attack, or is that down to the greenery on the surface down there in Port Elizabeth?
I think it's a combination. Definitely a combination. And I think this, if you make a comparison back to the Ashes, which was, you know, watched all over the world, and I think everyone is a bit disappointed as to, you know, they're saying England didn't really put up a fight. But I think what happened was England's approach, you know, they batted really well during the Ashes. You know, it was never so much, not batted, they bowled really well during the Ashes. Their batting was neither here or there. But the difference between Australia and England was Australia went out and took wickets. England went out, they bowled, and they made life difficult for Australia to score runs. I mean, Steve Smith scored a lot of runs, but he spent a hell of a lot of time at the crease as well. They made him work for those runs, and I think that was the difference. England were able to keep their run rate down low, but Australia batted time, and they backed themselves on bowling out England, and which they did. Now Australia's in South Africa. I think South Africa has the firepower to say to themselves, we're going to bowl Australia out. And that's what they've done. And now what they need to do is they need to, which we didn't see when they were playing against India, they need to put partnerships on the board. They need to put runs on the board. You've seen Elgar and Amla both batted time today. They batted They spent a lot of time at the crease. They both got to 50 at a 20% strike rate each. And then they got out. To me, that's a get in, get out. They worked so hard to get themselves into that position. And then the wickets have fallen. And now, you know, I think whoever's going to win the series, it's not about the 50s. It's about who's going to score big runs for their team. Yeah.
It's a fascinating series. We'll watch on with interest, as we are, of course, all developments at It's Just Cricket here in the UAE. Brad's very much involved in that when he's as part and parcel of his efforts for all things cricket here at the moment. Things going well?
Yeah, it's going great. You know, we've looked to align ourselves with all the people that are involved in cricket in the UAE and outside of the UAE. You know, we want to develop the game here as best we can for all stakeholders and all ages, from the youngsters up to even senior adults now that we're starting programs with them. But at the same time, getting coaching available for kids at the highest level. Our partnership with Sydney Thunder has been great. We had Watson and Chris Green down at the academy this week, working with the kids, and just to see their faces light up, to be around, you know, the big names of the game, it has been great. And being able to provide this to the kids through our academy has been a great opportunity.
Because you do stuff. The academy is based fundamentally out of Dubai College. That's where you do a lot of the courses. But yep, you're in schools as well, aren't you?
Correct. So our academy is based out of Dubai College. Great facilities there at Dubai, Dubai College. And then we're in schools as well. We're in Repton, Safa British School, and Wellington International School, and a couple of other schools now, you know, approaching us because of the program and the coaches involved, and you know, our coaching structure as well and philosophy.
Yeah. Good to have you on board as well. How's Mr. Charnley as well, the pride of Coventry? Is he doing all right?
He is doing great.
Good to get him back on the radio. He gets too nervous. You know, he's such a brilliant man to have on the radio.
It came down to a coin toss today. As we speak, he is umpiring a 40-over game, standing in the heat.
We can say what we like then.
He messaged me. He's like, "Oh, enjoy being on the radio. I'll be standing here in the heat." But you know, that's what we have to do in order to develop the game.
If people want to find out more about It's Just Cricket, about the courses that you offer for all different age groups, boys and girls alike, best way for them to do that is?
Yeah, go on our website, check our Instagram feed. Instagram feed is really great because it shows, you know, who's been down to the academy, what's happening in the academy. And yeah, I mean, just the little things that are coming up. You know, our Easter camps are coming up. Tours to India, tours to Zimbabwe. I mean, we had Streaky on the radio the last time, so we've organized a tour to his academy in Zimbabwe. The kids will get an opportunity to stay on his game farm. He'll take them for game drives to see the Big Five, play a bit of cricket. So yeah, a lot of interesting things happening at the academy.
That's the way to do it, isn't it? Yeah, we're always indebted to you and the It's Just Cricket team for bringing Big Heath Streak on. We had a fascinating chat with him a couple of weeks ago. What an absolute gent of a man as well. Stuck around to enjoy a bit of the sport afterwards as well. So in the interest of that, Archie, what's happening with Heath's team at the moment?
Yeah, we have a couple of the World Cup qualifiers taking place down in Zimbabwe today. Two big matches, really. The host Zimbabwe are taking on Hong Kong in Bulawayo. Zimbabwe batted first in their 50 overs. They scored 263 for 9. In reply, Hong Kong stumbling away, 130 for 7. So it looks as though Zimbabwe are in control of that match and should wrap that up and get the result there. The other big match, really, two of the more fancy teams to try and qualify for that World Cup. It's West Indies taking on Ireland at Harare Sports Club. West Indies batted first, got off to a very slow start, lost a number of wickets, but ended up with 257 for 8 in their 50 overs. Ireland 132 for 4 after 32 of their 50 overs. So it's fair to say the match is still evenly poised. Ireland need a further 126 runs, 6 wickets remaining, 18 overs to get them in. Could go either way still.
Final thought goes to Brad for his beloved Zimbabwe as well. Confident World Cup?
No, well,
qualification?
They've definitely put themselves in a good position. They win this game, and that's 3 out of 3 for them, and they confidently threw to the Super 6 or the top 6, who will play off for the top 2. And yeah, I mean, it's a great position because, as you guys would know, Zimbabwe was playing Afghanistan prior to this World Cup qualifier. They had a series here in the UAE. They lost the series 4-1. And heading back to Zimbabwe, turn of events, Zim has won all three of their games, one of them against Afghanistan. And now Afghanistan have lost all three of their games. So things not looking good for Afghanistan, which, you know, was unexpected. But, you know, the teams are working hard, putting their hands up. Zim is looking good, in good positions. Ireland, as always, shorter format of the games. They like to be competitive. West Indies, they have to qualify. It'd be sad not to see them in the World Cup. But in saying that, UAE, they've done really well. They've won two of their three matches. The game they stumbled against was against West Indies. West Indies scored 370-odd. In reply, UAE got 310 for 5. You know, I mean, that's a brilliant effort by them. Not for lack of wickets. It was just, you know, they fell behind their run rate. But, you know, a centurion by a UAE cricketer against the West Indies. You can confidently say that UAE cricket is, you know, on the way up.
And that's in no small part to all of the cricket coaches and academies here in the region at the moment contributing to it, of which Brad is one. Brad, bless you, mate. Thanks for your time. Thanks for coming on down and speaking to us.
Thank you so much, guys. It's always
brilliant to chat with you. Thank you for everything. Our thanks to you. All the best to Sam and the rest of the team. It's Just Cricket. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, though, we're going to go around the grounds. Got a lot to look forward to as well. Still another hour of the show after 6 o'clock, when we will be introducing you to a current England international, head of England's game against France in the Six Nations. Marlon Yard's down here at Barasti. We're going to be meeting him just after 6.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Guess what? There's been a goal at Old Trafford. Mark Archer's watching this for us.
Well, there's been 3 Manchester United goals to date at Old Trafford, but unfortunately it's come at the wrong end, the latest one. It's an own goal to Eric Bailly, returning after a long absence through injury. It was a cross from Sadio Mane up the left. It was an awkward, diverted back heel from Bailly reacting to the cross. It's beaten De Gea. And what it means, though, Tom, is with 25 minutes remaining at Old Trafford, it's Manchester United 2, Liverpool 1, game on.
Real Madrid are taking the points over in the early kickoff in the Liga. They beat Eibar by 2-1. Cristiano Ronaldo with a brace on 34 and 84. Let's get to the Super Rugby for you.
Tom, why did he just not leave that ball? Anyway, back to Super Rugby. What I can tell you is it's halftime at Kings Park. The Sharks are leading the Sunroofs 24-3. Tries by Mimpimpi, Arnold Fanamara and Rupala Muntembu.
That's what's happening in the rugby at the moment. What about the golf? Mark Archer's keeping an eye on the golf for us as well. In fact, we've had the end of third round over in India, have we not, Archie?
We have indeed. And the third round leaderboard looks like it's a tie for first. 7 under par between the man from the UK, Matt Wallace, and also the Indian sensation, the youngster Shubhankar Sharma, is tied for the lead, 7 under par, 1-shot lead over the Scot, Stephen Gallagher. So that's the score over in Delhi.
Let's get to the tennis for you now. Indian Wells is upon us. Some great tennis to be played down at Indian Wells. In fact, Roger Federer is down there, and guess what? He comes to Indian Wells as the world number one.
Yeah. Winning here last year was crazy. Having my kids in the stands, and it was just a surprise for me to win here last year after already winning the Australian Open. I couldn't believe that I did win here as well, so I think probably last year was my favourite. Getting to world number one in Rotterdam and then also winning the tournament was an amazing trip and an amazing journey and a great experience. I'm so happy to be here in Wales now as world number one. It's pretty crazy. I had a great trip to Indian Wells last year, so naturally I have a lot of points to defend. So there's a bit of pressure maybe in this regard, but I've defended my points for the last 20 years, so there's nothing new there, and I'll just try to give it my best and hopefully get off a good start here at the tournament.
The thoughts of the world number one, Roger Federer. He's in action later on, isn't he?
He's in action tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. Tom, what I can tell you, the world number one, the oldest world number one, takes on Del Pinas of Argentina. As I say, that game is on court one tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. We also got to forward to look Jack Sock is also in action tomorrow, as well as South African Kevin Anderson, the number 7 seed. He takes on Donsko. What I can tell you is, on the men's side of things, Dominic Thiem is through. So things are looking good there for him. And as you say, can Federer continue his sublime form that he has been in 2018?
It's going to be a fascinating final 20 minutes of Manchester United against Liverpool. Substitutions being made at the moment.
Yeah, a couple of subs actually for both teams. We've seen Liverpool take Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain off. On comes Adam Lallana. And Manchester United, we've seen Jose Mourinho just fire up the bus for the first time today. Marouane Fellaini has come on for the two-goal scorer, Marcus Rashford. Looks disappointed as he's gone off. But Jose Mourinho has warming up the engine. He's just taking for the bus around the block at the moment and seeing what he can do to hold on to that 2-1 lead. 20 minutes remaining at Old Trafford. Man United 2, Liverpool 1.
Look, it's a game that doesn't need much hyping, but it's a game that every time it comes around, it gets hyped. It is Manchester United against Liverpool. 20 minutes remain.
3 points. Plus the emotional side of it. One more big match. I always feel that rivalry is a very good thing for the football clubs. I am different. The rules for me are different.
So we can't like anything you stand for, and they don't like anything you stand for.
That's in front of the Liverpool fans, unfortunately, and has caused Liverpool a little upset.
This game is the biggest atmosphere that Manchester United will ever experience.
And that is one of the great United goals at Anfield.
Oh, that is fantastic. You never expected that for 1 minute, did you?
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.